I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network. Well, I got to tell you, I'm upset. I am frustrated watching what's going on with the Kavanaugh hearings, Kavanaugh Dr. Ford hearings. You know, here on Chasing Justice, we talk about justice and how to make sure we try and be a part of the solution and not the problem. And I look at this and I say, okay, we talked last week about the realities of people making reports and how we have no idea what happened between Dr. Ford and Judge Kavanaugh, if anything happened at all. But I wrote an article that's going to appear on the webpage here for America Out Loud, and it talks about justice when there is an accusation made against someone. So I want you to go take a look at that article. It should be up this week. What I'm basically talking about in that article is when someone makes an accusation against someone else. We are not in a third world country or a totalitarian type of a government where the government just makes an accusation and that's all it takes to drag you off the street and hold you accountable to whatever they said you did. What I witnessed at the Kavanaugh Ford hearings was, I'm trying to think of a better word other than an abomination of justice. Now, let's be crystal clear. None of us were there 35 years ago. We don't know what happened. So we're trying to reconstruct a high school party from 35 years ago. And who said and who did what? With basically no facts. So that leaves us to the two people that have to testify about what they know about that incident, that they were there. We have Dr. Ford, who has made a specific allegation against Judge Kavanaugh, saying not only was he the one at the party, but he sexually assaulted her. This is a very, very serious thing to throw at someone, to say they committed a sexual assault. There are millions of sexual assault victims across this country that have suffered for a lifetime over the attacks upon them. And there are millions of sexual assault victims who did not come forward at all. We know this to be true. We know that a lot of times sexual assault victims do not come forward for a whole host of reasons. Number one, number two, number three, it doesn't matter the reasons. We know that they're there. They didn't feel they had anyone who would listen to them. There was a time when people did not take it seriously. I think to deny that would be foolish. You know, there used to be a thought that, you know, oh, if you got sexually assaulted, you deserved it. They complained about how women dress. Well, that's the reason you got attacked. This is absurd, and we know that in this era of enlightenment. Anybody can dress any way they want. That does not give anyone permission to touch them, say anything to them, and go near them, no matter how provocative they may dress and how much you think you have a right to say something to somebody. Keep your hands and your face and your mouth off of people, unless those people want you to be with them. See, so I'm angry about that because I have a wife and I have a daughter. And they are independent, strong people. And they should be able to do whatever they want without being attacked, without having some person say something to them because the way they dress, because they look really nice when they're dressed nice. So they do catcalls and all this other nonsense. We know that people do. So I'm angry about what went on in the past. But we've tried to make up for it. We listen now to people when they say something has happened. We listen to their story. Dr. Ford came forward and she wanted to be anonymous. And I feel she was victimized by Senator Feinstein and the Democrats. If we are to take at face value and as truthful the fact that she said she did not want to come forward, she wanted to be make her report known, but she wanted to stay anonymous. She did not want to come forward. If we believe that, if we believe that's what she wanted to do, that she was doing just what she said, her civic duty, this man's about to be a Superior Court, a Supreme Court justice, and I want you to know he did this in his past. Okay. Then why didn't she remain anonymous? And I'm not laying the blame on her, on Dr. Ford. I think she was betrayed by Senator Feinstein and the Democrats on that committee, who absolutely used her or re-victimized her by dragging her name out. Now, that's only one of two options. Either they did that to her because they thought they could use it as political fodder to bang over the head of Kavanaugh and ultimately President Trump. Or number two, she was part of it from the beginning. And all of that is nonsense. Those are the only two choices you have here. Now, we weren't in on those meetings. We don't know exactly what went on between Dr. Ford and all the people she spoke to before she ended up testifying in front of Congress last week. We have no idea. So for us to even gander and say, well, she's all part of a conspiracy, she may be, she may not be. To say that she wanted to remain anonymous and the Democrats used her as a weapon is also, we don't know that for sure what happened, but we know the information was leaked, and Senator Feinstein says she has no idea how the information was leaked. I don't know that I believe that. Now, what I'm trying to get around to, and this is what we're going to concentrate today on Chasing Justice, is we're going to talk about the processes that take place here. We're not a third world country where accusation is enough. You have to have fact. You have to have testimony. You have to have witnesses. And then you have a jury, whether that be a judge in a bench trial, or you have a jury of peers, of our peers, who will listen to all of that evidence and put together some kind of understanding of what happened based on what they were told. They have to make a judgment based on the information they were given. This is our system. Because if we don't adhere to these principles in any instance where an allegation is made, then we are going to completely lose our system altogether. And that means that you, your children, your husband, father, son, boyfriend, daughter, anyone is going to become guilty of an accusation and damn the facts. So we're going to look into this a little bit deeper here. As you can hear, I'm riled up about this. I'm riled up because if Dr. Ford came forward and wanted to be anonymous and she was betrayed by Senator Feinstein and the Democrats, that is a horrible thing. She came forward looking for help and she was victimized again. Now, I don't know what happened to Dr. Ford. I watched her testimony and I listened to her and I heard her words and I found her to be a very sympathetic character. Now, some people have said that as a psychologist, she was using certain speech patterns that are more sympathetic when people hear them. These are absolutely true. I understand interview interrogation. I teach interview interrogation. I teach presentation. I understand all about how you want to come across, how you want to make an impression, what impression you want to make, etc. So I'm not going to say that she wasn't doing any of those things. As a psychologist, I'm going to say she probably understands them. So she's either genuine or she's not. Do you see, all of these things we're going to talk about come down to one side or the other, and we have to make a decision not based on the power of the allegation, because sexual assault is a hugely powerful allegation. It is a horrible crime that is deserving of the most severe punishment. But we have to make sure that it's justice that is served. Right? Because the other side of the equation, what nobody wants to talk about, is that people do make false allegations. Making an allegation of sexual assault is an extremely powerful tool. As an investigator, and I've told you, go ask the cops you know that investigate these things. We do find false allegations of sexual assault because it is such a powerful weapon. You know, if somebody does something or is somewhere they shouldn't be, and then they realize they shouldn't have been there, and they scream, "I was sexually assaulted," that stops the entire process. Everyone lines up to try and help that person. So I'm not saying it's right or wrong, and I'm not casting doubt on anyone who comes forward with an accusation of sexual assault. I'm simply saying to be just and do right by everyone who makes a claim and everyone who is accused. We need to understand what we're talking about and not just go at it emotionally. If we just go at it emotionally, we're missing half the game and we're being played. So I don't know what happened to Dr. Ford 35 years ago. When I listened to her, there were parts of her story I felt were problematic. I listened to her heartfelt plea. I listened to her say what she said happened to her. and I believe something happened to her. I don't believe it was Mr. Kavanaugh. I just don't think it was, based on what he said. I wasn't there. He could have very well been the guy who did it. But based on the evidence that was presented in that hearing, I have to make a decision, me personally, by what I listened to and what I saw. This is what we all must do anytime there's an allegation. So some of the things I found that I think are important. Dr. Ford says this was such a powerful thing that happened to her. It scarred her and damaged her life. Sexual assault will do that to people. A violent assault, a violent robbery will do that to people. Any traumatic experience will do that to people. So that's a horrible thing. So she said that this happened to her, I guess when she was 15 or 16 years old. And she knew that it was Brett Kavanaugh who did it. When she knew it was Brett Kavanaugh, I don't know. That's not clear in her testimony. But she was positive. She said she was positive it was him. She had no doubt. I think one of the senators asked her, and she said it was 100% sure it was Brett Kavanaugh who did this to her. And it was his friend, Mr. Judge, who came into the bedroom, jumped on the bed, and that's what knocked Kavanaugh off, and that's how she managed to escape. Is any of that plausible? It is. Her story is plausible. It absolutely is. As an investigator, you have to say that. That's a plausible story. Now we have to listen to what the rest of the things she said. She doesn't remember how she got to the party. She doesn't remember where the party was. She doesn't remember who was hosting the party. Are those things possible? Do teenage people show up at parties that they just hear there's a party and they end up at a party? Yes, they do. And if you don't know that that's true, you've never been a teenager or you've never been out to parties. I remember lots of times we would hear that there was a party in a certain neighborhood and we would just show up till we saw all the kids at the front door and then we would go in. So that part, is that plausible? Okay. What I don't find plausible about it is because of the traumatic event that took place there that she reports at this party, that she doesn't remember where the party was, specifically when the party was, or how she got there. Did she go by herself to this party? Or did she go with friends? If she did, who's the friends? Let the friends come forward and say, oh yeah, we went to that party. It was at Billy Jones's house, 123 Main Street. She doesn't provide any of that. She just says she was at this party. She said she had one beer. I believe that's what she testified. She had one beer. Now, I know people will say they had one beer because either one, they only had one beer, or number two, somebody told them, you don't want to come across as that you were intoxicated. So then maybe you had some culpability. So you just had one beer. Everybody can understand one beer, man, you're perfectly fine. So she said she had one beer. Only one of two things happened there. She was telling the truth and only had one beer. Or two, she had more than one beer and she doesn't want to sound like she was intoxicated herself whenever this happened or whatever happened to her. Okay? So she doesn't know how she got there. She doesn't know who was there. She doesn't know whose party it was. Then she has this encounter with Brett Kavanaugh. She's positive it was Brett Kavanaugh and his friend, Mr. Judge. She manages to escape from this room, which I can imagine must have been horrible. Must have been scary. I would not want my daughter in that position, or my wife, or any other woman to be in that position. So that must have been horrifically scary for her, if that's what happened. And her impression was she was going to be sexually assaulted. Horrible and terrible. But she managed to escape. She ran to another room, locked herself in that room, and waited till she heard the two boys leave, or who the two men leave, whoever she was describing them. And then she got out, and she got out of there away from that party. Now, she wasn't intoxicated by her own saying. But she can't tell us how she left the party. Who did she call to come and get her? Apparently, she was 6 to 8 miles away from her home. She was 15 or 16 years old. So she doesn't remember, did she walk 6 or 8 miles home? Did someone pick her up? Did someone at the party give her a ride? Who did she call to get her? I don't know. She doesn't know. When we look at that in the cold light of day, we have to say, you might not remember how you got there because it was just one of those things. But after this traumatic event, when you had to escape for your very life, you didn't tell anybody at the party? Who were your friends that were at the party that you could have went downstairs to and said, oh my gosh, this just happened to me. Let's get out of here. Well, she does mention one friend specifically. She mentions one friend that she told about this. That's important because in segment two, in round two, we're going to talk about what that means with the first person you tell after a sexual assault. But apparently she tells this person, this just happened to me and this is what happened. Unfortunately, when we talk to that person, the person she named as her best friend that she told this about, her best friend says, I don't know what she's talking about. I didn't know Brett Kavanaugh. I never saw Brett Kavanaugh at a party, and I was never at a party where this happened to my friend. That is evidence. Because we don't have physical evidence. There were no cameras to show who went in and out of this party 30 years ago, 35 years ago. All we have is testimony. We have Dr. Ford telling us this is what happened and giving us a name of someone to corroborate her story. When they go to that person says, I don't know what Dr. Ford is talking about. I didn't see Brett Kavanaugh. I don't know Brett Kavanaugh. I didn't know him. And I was never at that party. So the one person she names as being there that she told to says they don't know what she's talking about. I find that difficult to take as important evidence beyond the fact that she just said it. So her one person that she gave to bolster her story not only didn't bolster her story and back her up, that person refuted what she said. This is important. And again, I don't know what happened to Dr. Ford. I think something did happen to her. But this incident she's claiming where Brett Kavanaugh was there doesn't sound like that's what actually happened here. Maybe she's conflating it with something else. I don't know. But I have to look at that evidence. She doesn't remember how she left that party, that traumatic event. So did she have a blackout of fear because of what this happened so she doesn't remember any of that? I'm not a psychologist or psychiatrist. I don't know if that's possible. I think I've talked to a lot of sex assault victims, and many of them have been intoxicated when it happened to them or whatever, but they remember specific things about how they got out of there, who they called, who helped them, how they got away. Dr. Ford doesn't know any of that, and the people she names, a person she names as someone who would be able to back her up, refutes her story and says, I don't know what she's talking about. This is a terrible, terrible situation for Dr. Ford, for Judge Kavanaugh, and for all of us as Americans. And when we come back in a minute to round two, we're going to keep going with this. We're going to keep tearing this apart, and we're going to talk about evidence and witnesses and why this is important to each and every one of us. So we'll be back in a minute with Chasing Justice Round 2 here on the America Out Loud Radio Network.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody, to Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network. Once again, I want to talk about a couple of our sponsors. You know, we want to talk about the Blue Magazine. Blue Magazine is for law enforcement men and women across this country. You can find it at www.thebluemagazine.com. I have written for this magazine for 7 or 8 years. It's been a pleasure to write for them. They're all professionals, and their whole job is to get the word about law enforcement out to the law enforcement community. So take a look. TheBlueMagazine.com. I think you're going to absolutely love it. Next, we're going to talk about A-plus technology and security. Well, I'll tell you, the A-plus technology and security team is the go-to for any of your electronic safety and security needs. Matter of fact, they just came out with a product where they won a huge award for it out at a convention in Las Vegas. It's called the Halo. Do you have vaping problems in your school? All right, vaping, you know, that's when you use the vapes because these kids are using drugs in the vapes. And they're also vaping in the school when they shouldn't be smoking at all. And I've seen a lot of schools keep the bathroom doors open because they don't want the kids to be vaping in there. Well, they created this Halo device, and it looks like a smoke detector, but it's not. The Halo device is stored, it's fixed to the ceiling like a smoke detector, and it does detect smoke. It also detects a whole bunch of environmental chemicals that could be dangerous, that could hurt you. All right, so and you can design it so that it picks up certain chemicals. You know, if you're in a certain environment where you don't want different kinds of chemicals in that environment, whatever they are, particularly, you can do that. But it also picks up vaping, so that it can sense when there's vape smoke in the air. It also has a sound device on it that it can recognize breaking glass to prevent burglaries and gunshots. And the beauty of this machine, this Halo, is that once it detects one of these things, it has a wireless internet capability that it can send text messages about what it's whatever it's detecting to whoever it is you want. So if you want your principal to know every time somebody's vaping, it sends a wireless text message, vaping going on in bathroom 3.5. So you can go down there and see who's doing it. You can stop it. You can find out who's doing this. If there's gunshots, it can send a message to the police. Gunshots heard. All right? So it's a fantastic thing. A-plus technology and security, aplustechnology.com. Go check it out. Awesome. All right? So those are our sponsors for this part of the show. All right, we're going to get back to this now. All right, we're going to be talking about the need for understanding evidence and why we can't just go by accusation. Now, I understand that there's a huge part of our population that is frustrated that women for years were not believed when they came up with a claim of sexual assault, because everyone wanted, oh, absolutely not, you're making it up, the way you were dressing, we talked about that. That is ridiculous. We know that there are many, many, many more times real victims that don't come forward than the ones that do report. That's a phenomenon of the thing. It's embarrassing. Not everybody wants to come forward and say they were sexually assaulted. All right, so I don't blame any of the victims, whether they come forward or not come forward. If they do, we have to listen to them and we have to investigate. But we cannot, as a society, simply say, because someone makes a claim, we have to believe that claim 100%. We have to believe people when they come forward that they're making a claim. That is true. We have to give them due diligence. That is true. But we have to investigate that accusation, not simply assign guilt to someone because an accusation was made. That is not how our system works. And we know that not every accusation is real. See, that's the caveat. If you could say that 100% of sexual assault allegations that are made against people are 100% real and true, then I guess you could say the accusation is pretty powerful enough to really go after somebody. But that's not the world we live in. That's not how it really works. There are many false reports of sexual assault. Unfortunately, there are many, many real ones that need to be investigated, and people need to be held to account for their behavior and for what they've done to other people. So we're in a tough spot here. But because we're in a tough spot does not mean we dive all the way to one side and just say, if somebody makes the accusation, the other person is automatically guilty. We can't do that. That is not justice for anyone. And what happens when it's you that's accused of this, or somebody in your family, or somebody you're associated with, and they're accused, they're just automatically guilty. Their lives are ruined, their jobs are taken away, and we railroad them out of town. Do you see the danger of that? We can't do that with anything. So it's not a matter of, because you don't necessarily go immediately to guilt, that you're disrespecting women or the women who are coming forward to make the allegation. That's not it at all. We have to listen, but we have to investigate. We can't just say, well, it was said, so therefore, that's it. There's nothing to investigate. It happened. Of course we have to investigate. We owe that to everyone. And in our system, you're innocent until proven guilty. Right? You're innocent until proven guilty. If we take that away from us, that's one of the standards of being an American that keep us free. That's not to be taken lightly. Right? There is nothing about disrespecting people to say we must stick with our principles and the things that we know work. If someone makes a claim of sexual assault, we have to take it seriously. We have to look at it closely. We have to investigate it. And if someone has done something inappropriate, we prosecute them. We can't just take the accusation, and immediately assume you're guilty, now prove you didn't do it. That's not how our system works. Because you know what? I could say to you, you were on a vacation last summer, weren't you? You went to New Hampshire. Well, you know what? there was a house broken into and money was stolen out of the house in the town where you were vacationing, right? Somebody said you did it. Prove you didn't. Can you prove you didn't do that? Well, you might be able to account. I was at the beach on this day and we went mountain climbing on that day. But there's going to be some time in your schedule that you don't have accounted for. And now you have to prove that you didn't do something? That's very difficult. Especially if you didn't do it. How do you prove you didn't do it? So we're going to go back now to the Dr. Ford and Judge Kavanaugh situation. We left off in segment number one there when I was talking about it, saying she gave a very good presentation for herself, although there are some people who have found fault with some of the things she did, and I don't know if they were true or not, if she was acting, so to speak, in certain things. Do people act when they're on the stand? Yes, they do. Anyone's gone to court and does it seriously tells you all the time. A lot of what court is all about is about show, just like this entire process. You see our senators jumping up and down, sounding like idiots for the most part, talking about flatulence and trying to catch people in their words. You see all that nonsense? They were doing that because there's a camera on. And a lot of these people are trying to run for president and they want to have their base see them as, boy, look what they were doing. Look what my guy did or my girl did. She really strong and she didn't take no guff. Doesn't help any of us. Doesn't help our system. And frankly, it was embarrassing. We'll get into those details in a little bit. So here's Dr. Ford. She gives the name of four people in total that she says can back up her story. When you don't have physical evidence, witness testimony can be very powerful, very persuading, and can lead to convictions in a court of law. Now, this is not a court of law. This is a hearing. But make no mistake, you see the way it's being handled. It is absolutely being treated like it is a criminal trial. And Judge Kavanaugh is on trial because of the accusation. He's automatically assumed guilty. And we're listening to Dr. Ford tell us her story, and then he's going to have to prove he didn't do any of this. How would you like to be in that position? How would you like your son, your husband, your daughter to be in that position? Prove you didn't do it because somebody said you did, right? So even in the beginning, Dr. Ford's lawyers wanted her to go second. Well, that's not how it works. The accusation comes first, and then the person gets to defend themselves from the accusation. If the person who's being accused has to go first, then the person who's making the accusation can change their story to cover what the person just said, to wipe out their alibi. So that's why the accuser goes first. You say what the person did, you lay out your case, and then they get to defend themselves from that. So Dr. Ford gave us the name of four people that could back up her story, because we don't have physical evidence. We have to go by witness testimony. Those witnesses, all four of them, did not and could not back up Dr. Ford's story. She gave us the names. She said, these four people will help me prove my case because they know what happened. And all four of them either could not help her case, could not provide any information, or specifically refuted what she said. So that leaves her, unfortunately, alone on an island making accusations. Now we come to Judge Kavanaugh, and he's going to go up and testify. He goes up, and we hear people, you know, all the pundits now, they're coming out talking about how he testified. Well, he came out, and his initial statement was very powerful, was very well done. He broke down. He got emotional at times. He was very strong at other times. He was defiant. He was angry. He was all those things. Well, we can only look at that one of two ways. The old saying, thou dost protest too much. If you're guilty and you protest too much, sometimes you say, wow, this guy's kind of really going overboard here saying he didn't do this, no matter what it is, this case or any other case. That's where the old saying comes from. Thou dost protest too much. So maybe he's protesting too much because, one, he's guilty. Maybe he did this and he's really trying hard. Or number two, imagine if you didn't do something as horrific as what you're being accused of like this on national TV in front of the world. Think you might be a little angry? Think you might be a little hurt? think you might be a little emotional that your family is getting death threats and people are calling you a multiple gang rapist? Do you think that'd be a little bit of a problem? I think it would be. So as a person who judges when people are interviewed and interrogated, how they respond, because words mean things, body language is about 80% of how we respond. I watched both of these people, how they responded, their body language. And I have to say, listening to Judge Kavanaugh, I found his answers to be appropriate. I found his anger, if he's not guilty, to be more than appropriate. He responded with what we call a good read. He was angry. He's accused of something he didn't do. And it is hurting him. And he responded appropriately. So all these people who are saying he doesn't have the demeanor to be a judge, he was angry and he was this and he was that, they don't know what they're talking about. They're just running their mouth. Because first of all, now let's look at evidence. He's been a judge for, 10 years, 11 years? And they do a thing on temperament. The temperament of a judge is very important. How they handle their courtroom, how they handle witnesses and accused. And would you expect that a guy that they're saying he has no temperament to be a judge probably would have had that come out at some point in those 10 years? Well, when we look back, we find out that Judge Kavanaugh has been rated on his temperament in his courtroom. And guess what? His temperament is rated as excellent. He's a very good judge. He listens to people. He runs his courtroom appropriately and properly. There is no problem with his temperament. This is people who don't know what they're talking about, taking an example that, in my opinion, they're trying to find fault with what he said and did, and they're throwing that back, saying, he doesn't know that he was screaming and hollering, and he was bullying. Well, who was he bullying to? They're trying to intimate that he was bullying to women, showing, look at how he's trying to overpower that woman. Well, he wasn't talking to Dr. Ford when he was testifying. And in this modern world, when they say that he rebuffed one of the senators, it was a female senator, he was trying to go after her. It's 2018, ladies and gentlemen. Everybody is an equal. I think that's the whole idea. So if you ask me a question that I don't like, whether you're a man or a woman, I'm going to respond in the same way. Unless you're saying, it doesn't matter if you're a man and woman, except how I respond to you. Then I have to treat women differently than I treat men. Right? I think that's ridiculous. So I think what he did is he responded to the question and the way the question was asked, regardless of the fact that it was a woman. That's what I saw. So there, I see people afterwards, or just like some people are trying to say Dr. Ford changed her voice pattern so she'd be more sympathetic. There are people who are looking at how he responded, trying to assign a bad motive to him by doing that. Because their whole idea, they want you to believe he's a horrible, terrible person to women. He's a gang rapist and he's a danger to all of us. None of that has come up in his life. And I have heard people say that if you are a gang rapist, when you are 15, 16, 17 years old, that you're going to be that way most of your life. I got news for you. Most of that's true. Sexual proclivities do not really go away. So someone who has a sexual proclivity to violence doesn't change that in their senior year of high school and never ever do it again. It comes up again and again and again in patterns. We are human beings. We have patterns of behavior. And when it comes to sexuality, those are one of our natural drives. And our natural drives are unique to us. And we can't always change them. You know, pedophiles, they don't always get over the fact that they like little children. What they do is learn how to play the system so that they can get over. You see, they don't ever just stop liking to have sex with little children. All right, so someone who's a gang rapist, who drugs people and has sex with them, doesn't just do it for 6 months of their life and then never do it again. That's not how it works. Look at Bill Cosby. He did this for years because that's something that he did. It was his sexuality that caused him to do it. So these are big investigative things that my investigator friends out there will understand. And we're trying to pass this on to you here on Chasing Justice to give you some enlightenment into these things. Okay, so Judge Kavanaugh is testifying. He's been accused of horrific, horrible things. And he has literally hundreds of witnesses who have come forward and said they've known him all his life, including back in high school, men and women, and said he's never, ever behaved in this way. This is not how they known him to be. They didn't know him to be sexually aggressive. Matter of fact, the man has said he didn't have sex until he was in college, that he was a virgin until then. So you have a gang rapist that hasn't had sex? Now, is that true or not? I don't know. This is what he said. He said this on an American stage in an American time of life when sexual prowess is very important to us, isn't it? Right? We don't talk about decency and chastity anymore. That's old fashioned. We talk about our conquests and what we've done and who we've done it with. Not this man. He says, no, I was a virgin until I was into college. All right? So he revealed a lot of himself in this. So the evidence, the only evidence available, is the testimony and the witnesses that these two people bring forward. And Dr. Ford brought forward her four witnesses and her story, and none of it panned out. None of it made any sense. You couldn't check the boxes. She didn't have a witness to come forward and go, you know what? Right after the incident, my friend did tell me about this, and she said it was this guy, Brett Kavanaugh, and it was horrible, and she felt like she was going to get raped, and she didn't know what to do. That would be good evidence. And when we come back in a minute, in round three, we're going to talk about the fresh complaint witness and what that means in a sexual assault investigation, how that plays into the evidence of spoken word, witnesses, and testimony. When that's all you have, that's important stuff. So we'll be right back here on Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Hi, I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and I am your host, and I am thrilled to be here with you. Between our different rounds, our different segments here, I have a tendency to collect my thoughts, think about what's going on, think about where I want to go with you, what do I want to tell you, what opinions do I want to give you, what facts do I want to give you, and I have a tendency to calm down and then get amped up again for the next segment as I go. So before we get started and I get amped up again for this round three, I want to talk about another one of our sponsors here, and that is my company, True Security Design, Pangaro Training. Right? It used to be Pangaro Training on its own, and I taught police officers, school people, and business people safety and security things. I did threat assessments for different places. Well, my company is now expanded, unfortunately, due to demand for quality threat assessments and quality training. And I'm very proud of the fact that all of my students have rated my training and my programs very, very highly. I work very hard to do the very best that I possibly can. So True Security Design, you can find us at truesecuritydesign.com. But right now, we're rebuilding our website. So if you want to find out information about the training that I offer, the classes, and more about my background, you can go to jpangaro.com. That's the letter J, P as in Peter, A-N-G-A-R-O.com, where you'll see my original website before we transition over to True Security Design. So give us a call if you need threat assessments for your schools, for your businesses, or any type of safety and security training. This is what we do. We are passionate about it. And our job is to keep you, your students, and your staff, and everyone safe and secure. So that's jpangaro.com, True Security Design. Thank you for listening to that. Okay, here we go. Let's plow into this head-on for round three. So we were talking about the power of witness testimony and how when that's all you have, people are convicted on witness testimony. We know that in a lot of criminal cases, eyewitness testimony is relied on very heavily by juries. They want to hear somebody or see somebody point to somebody and say, that's the guy right there, and that's what he did. Those of us on the other side, on the law enforcement side, on the prosecutor side, we know that eyewitness testimony can be really bad sometimes because people think they saw something, they think they have a good description, they think they heard something, and in reality, oftentimes, eyewitness description is wrong. And you can find that out as if you investigate. See, all of this is about investigating properly. Once again, we say we don't we know what happened, if anything happened, between Judge Kavanaugh and Dr. Ford. We don't know. We weren't there. We are all coming at this with our own biases. If you are saying, I believe her because women don't lie and we have to empower women to report sexual assault, I can't say I disagree with some of that because women should come forward. Anyone who's been sexually assaulted should come forward and get the help they need. No one should feel they can't come forward. So I agree with that part. But we can't just say because someone makes an allegation that we have to believe it immediately and the other person is guilty. We have to say you've made an allegation, you've made a claim, we're going to investigate it. We're going to look at the evidence and we're going to make a determination of is this real? Did it happen? How did it happen? And if we can determine that it did, we have to prosecute the person very strongly and they have to be held to account for what their actions, no doubt. But we can't let an accusation destroy someone simply because an accusation is made, because we do know false accusations are made all the time. That's a reality. You can argue with Lieutenant Joe all you want. It's the truth. So we have to take that into account. So when we talk about what people tell us, there are a couple of things that are inherent in the legal system that involve around testimony. One of them is a dying declaration. Right? This is considered what they call inherently reliable. It means, because of the fact that something somebody says as they're dying, you have to kind of interpret the fact that these people know they're dying, and therefore whatever they say is going to be their last testament going out of this world, that we would believe that that would be truthful. So when somebody says something, Bob did it, Bob shot me, or you know, Mary Ellen stole the money 30 years ago, we can inherently believe that there was truth to that because people are not so diabolical that as I'm dying, I'm going to throw this out there and you know gum up the works. They have a tendency to tell the truth. They confess on their deathbed also. We'll hear about things people did long time ago because as they're dying, they want a clearer conscience. So the courts have recognized that the dying declaration is inherently reliable. Well, there's another one that the courts consider inherently reliable, and that is in the case of a sexual assault. They call it the fresh complaint witness. A fresh complaint witness is a person, the first person, that the victim of sexual assault reveals the assault to. So if something happens to somebody, say at a house party somewhere, and they are sexually assaulted, and they run out of the house, and they go down the block to their friend's house and knock on the door, and they tell their friend, oh my gosh, I was just at this house party and Billy Jones pulled off my shirt and he touched me and he did things to me sexually and I can't believe this happened and I don't know what I should do about it. Now, whether the victim reports it to the police or not, that person that they told it to is the fresh complaint witness. Now, if there is a police investigation and the police will go and talk to a lot of people, they'll talk to the people at the party, they'll talk to the victim, they'll talk to the accused, and they'll talk to everybody. One of the persons that they want to get to right away, though, is the fresh complaint witness, because the courts look at the fresh complaint witness, the first person you tell after you've been assaulted, is considered inherently reliable because at that moment, whatever happened and you're telling someone is considered truthful. You're not making up stories. You're not concocting why you were where you were. You're telling the truth. This is what happened. All right. So that first person is very, very important. The fresh complaint witness. Now, when it comes to testimony, and we said that eyewitness testimony is often fallible, it is. And it can also be, you know, taken apart in court by good attorneys. They can tear it apart and you know draw shadows of a doubt on things that you remember and you saw, and it can get people to realize that maybe they didn't see it. A great one is from the movie My Cousin Vinny. Now, that's a movie. It's not real. But you remember initially all those witnesses, they came forward and testified everything they saw. Boy, it was lock, stock, and barrel. They got these guys. But then as the attorney went through it and he brought in facts, he realized that the guy that saw crystal clear that it was the car was looking through a dirty window. The woman that could see positively at 100 feet away the eye color of the guys who did the murder, she couldn't see 6 feet away without her glasses, and she didn't have them that day. So the whole idea is that eyewitness testimony can be refuted with facts. Right? You can bring it around. The fresh complaint witness is considered inherently reliable because it's the first person when you were so upset that you told. You're not going to take time to make up a story. You're not going to take time to change the facts. Because over time, you might tell your fresh complaint witness exactly what happened. The truth, the whole truth and nothing but the truth. Then as time goes by, as human beings, we start to now deal with the consequences of things that happened, or the world that's around us. People start asking us, well, why were you there? You didn't say you were going to that house party. You said you were going over here with your friend. Why? Now all of a sudden you start to feel bad, and you might start to change your story a little bit so that you can give the right answers to the right people. And there's lots of people that are going to ask you questions. So you might change your story inadvertently or consciously, but it changes from what you originally told, which was the truth, to your fresh complaint witness. So in an investigation like a sexual assault, we want to get to that fresh complaint witness as quickly as we can and get their interpretation of what you said, because there's a lot of inherent truth in that. Do we have a fresh complaint witness here in this case? Judge Kavanaugh and Dr. Ford. We do not. We do not have a fresh complaint witness. The closest thing we have to that is her very good friend that she said knew all about this and was at the party and knew that Brett Kavanaugh was there with his friend Judge. And that witness refuted that and said, I don't know what she's talking about. I don't know Brett Kavanaugh. I wasn't at a party with him. And I don't know anything she's saying. So who is the fresh complaint witness? I'm not trying to hurt this woman. I don't know what happened to her. I think something happened to her. But who's her friend? Who's the first person she told about this? Was it 28 years later? She told her psychiatrist that she was talking to, her psychologist? You know, is that the first person she told 28 years later? I don't know. All those facts haven't come out because you know what? It's really awkward to investigate the victim of a sexual assault. It's really hard because then you look like you're not believing them. You look like you don't trust them. It looks like all the old stereotypes about sexual assault are coming forward and you are part of the problem instead of part of the solution. When in reality, no matter what kind of crime is alleged, we have to investigate it fully and completely. All right, one of the things I used to do when I investigated a sexual assault is I would try and explain this part of the investigation to the victim. Obviously not that moment that they're first reporting it, they're very upset. But as I continued the investigation, I would say, listen, you have to imagine that some people are going to doubt what you're saying, especially the defendant or the accused. Other people may not believe it. People are going to stand up for that person and try and, you know, say you're a liar or whatever. We need to answer these questions together before they come up in court. So let's explore this. Why did you go to the party? Who did you see? Did you do anything that this person would think maybe they wanted to be with you? Now, let's stop right there because this is a red flag crisis point for a lot of people. I'm not saying that if you like someone and you go into a room with them and you start making out with them and you start doing some heavy petting with them and then you decide you want to stop having sex, that's perfectly legitimate. Let's be clear about that. People are free to do whatever they want to do. You don't get to do, well, I did four things, so I can't say no at this point. That is BS, right? I have boys, and I tell my boys, if you're out and you're having this relationship with this young lady and you're doing all kinds of things and then she wants you to stop, that's when you stop. You don't get to say, well, you brought me this far, man. I get to finish up. Absolutely not. When someone says stop, you stop. And that goes for anybody, men and women. So let's be clear on that. What I'm saying, though, is sometimes we meet people and we like them and we're drawn to them and we're attracted to them and we start to engage them in physical activities. But then we realize maybe we won't want to go this far. We don't want to go any further and we want to stop. Well, for some people, once you start to say, yeah, I did those things. Oh, well, if you did that, then you did the whole thing. That's why the he said, she said sexual assault investigation is so difficult to prove. Because one side saying he has sexually assaulted me and the other side is saying I didn't sexually assault her. She wanted to have sex with me and now for whatever reason she's coming up with this. How do you determine? Were you there? Well, we can look at forensic evidence. There's evidence of injury in a sexual assault that are not present generally in a consensual sexual encounter. Believe it or not, there are things doctors can find that can indicate minute sexual injuries to people when it's a forced sexual type of thing, which is a thing for a whole nother show. But there are things you can do forensically to figure that out. So here we have this information. And I would have to ask these victims, did you do anything? Did you like this person? Did you find them attractive? Did you go with them in any way? And then did you tell them to stop and they didn't? How did you say you told them to stop? What did they do then? Because I need to know that as the investigator. Because you know what? People are allowed to do things with other people. And they're allowed to say, that's it, no more. And the other person has to stop. But as the investigator, I needed to know that. You don't want to find that out on the stand when someone's upset and gets another witness that says, well, they were sitting out in the living room and boy, they were kissing pretty good. Meantime, the victim said she never did anything with the guy. That makes the victim look bad. So we need to know that in advance because people are allowed to do things with people. Just because they do doesn't mean that they get sexually assaulted. When somebody says stop, you stop. Do you get this? Do you see where I'm trying to go with this? So that sometimes these are human interaction things that we have to break down. So when I look at the witnesses that they had come out, and I'm looking at this information, and I say there's no fresh complaint witness. The closest thing we have to it, apparently, is Dr. Ford's friend, who refuted what she said completely. In other words, she said, I don't know what she's talking about. I can't back her up. And Dr. Ford's saying, this woman can back me up. Well, no, she can't. So that evidence is gone. There is no proof of that. There's no proof of anything. The other three witnesses said the same thing. The witness that she said, Mr. Judge, jumped on the bed and that's why Judge Kavanaugh fell off of her and she managed to escape. So let's look at that for a minute. They've asked Mr. Judge and he didn't want to testify and apparently he has a difficult background. Apparently what I've read, he had an alcohol problem and he wrote a book about it and this and that. But he didn't want to testify. Would it be strange for this guy to come forward and say, nothing happened? No, we have to be common sense about it. If he was in the room watching this happen and he didn't physically stop his friend, that's bad too. So I wouldn't expect him to say anything less than, my friend didn't do that. But this is someone she's saying did this crucial thing, jumped on the bed, and that's what stopped Judge Kavanaugh from finishing his attack. Very important evidence. But Mr. Judge says, never happened. Don't know what she's talking about. So even though we can be suspect that Mr. Judge would not say anything to put himself in peril or his friend, he's the fifth person that Dr. Ford named that cannot back up her story. Four of them were her witnesses and her people. One was Judge Kavanaugh's people, and he says no. So you still have nothing, no physical evidence. You have no corroborative evidence. You have no statement evidence. You have no fresh complaint witness. You have nothing to back up her story other than her words. And her words are very sympathetic. You can imagine this young girl being assaulted in such a way. It is horrible. And I know that millions of women are assaulted in similar ways. And I hate every single one of them. I wish I could help all of them. But for people to just jump on board and say, because she said it, I absolutely believe it, and he's a liar, does not serve justice. Not in our system. He may or may not have done it. We don't know. Only those two know. And they're both saying different things. So I'm going to end up here. Talk about Judge Kavanaugh's situation. Having to be able to say, I didn't do it, and then prove a negative. How do you prove you didn't do it? Well, the guy had calendars from 1982. Now, I'm sure he didn't save those calendars from 1982. In case I get charged with sexual assault, I can look at these. People said, well, it's weird that he kept the calendars. I thought it was weird too, till I heard his explanation. He loves and respects his father, and his father saved calendars as a journal and as a diary, so he decided to do it. My father did a lot of things too that I thought were, oh my God, my father's a great guy, I'm going to do those things too. Right? Personal habits or things that you do around the house or how you do. So I can understand that. Once he explained it, it made perfect sense why he kept his calendar. But then there's the calendar. So we look at the calendar, and it seems to show that he was not available, and he made detailed information on that calendar about every party he went to, but he didn't mention this one, right? So it seems like he was writing it down before the party happened. So it's not like he wrote it down that, uh-oh, I did a bad thing, I better erase it. There was none of that. Then watching these senators go over each and every word, What is this boofing? You know what they were going for? They thought that meant boffing, which is the street term for having sex. You and your buddy were boffing all these girls, right? That's what you're saying? He says, no, boofing stands for flatulence. We were 16 years old. Because that's what stupid 16-year-old boys talk about. They make fart jokes. So here we have taken this most important hearing about who's going to be a Supreme Court justice. And our friends on the left have turned it into a circus of base, vile disgust. Unfortunately, we may never know what actually happened 35 years ago to Dr. Ford. Everything she's brought up has been refuted. In our system, Judge Kavanaugh doesn't have to prove he didn't do it. She has to prove he did. And after watching all of this, she did not prove that he did it. So that's where we're going to leave it here on Chasing Justice. You have to make up your mind. But remember, look at facts. Look at evidence. Make common sense out of it. Just because we think sexual assault is a horrible thing doesn't mean we just have to jump on an accusation and say, if there's an accusation, it has to be true. We have to investigate. We have to chase justice in every case. We'll see you next week. Remember, be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem.